Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
And welcome to the web show on the British Tech Network. I'm Paul Wheatley, and I've assembled a superb panel here with me this evening to discuss the ins and outs of the EU cookie directive. Hopefully you'll leave this podcast to understand a little more about this, the mother of all vague and wild EU directives. To start with, the British Tech Network's own Sarah Gray, how are you? How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I would say from sunny Ireland, but except it's not sunny, and it certainly isn't at this time of night. But yes, I'm not in the UK at the moment. So
all right, okay. Yes,
I'm working over here. So cool. But obviously, with doing the shows, I can do them anywhere. So I've done the big show from many times over here before, and the F1 show as well, for that matter.
All right, okay. You coming back across for the bash?
Sorry?
Are you coming back across for the bash on Thursday?
I am coming back just for the bash, and then I'm coming back to Ireland again because it's my birthday at the end of the week. So
very nice.
That's why I want to be back here. But I will be back in England for 24 hours for the bash, yes.
That's dedication. Next, we have Joe Leach. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm very good, thank you. It's a miserable, overcast, grey evening in Scotland, so I'm quite happy to be indoors doing this. So
yeah, I'm the same. Well, I'm in Bristol, and it's pretty much the same here as well.
Ah, right, okay. So your Twitter bio says, drinking tea and making the internet a better place one site at a time, recovering neuroscientist and UX director at CX Partners. Does that pretty much sum up your background?
Yeah, that sums me up. So yeah, as Perfect. You said, I'm a UX consultant. So I tend to work with big kind of international and UK blue chip companies, mm-hmm. advising them on how to make their websites better.
Mm-hmm. Grand. And finally on the panel this evening, we have Lenny Sefton. Now, I'm assuming that is your name, because I noticed in your emails and our communication, you're Lenny Leonard.
Yeah, it's an informal name.
Now, your Twitter bio simply states, space is ace. I completely agree with you. However, that's not very helpful in telling us a little bit about your background. Could you elaborate a little bit?
Yeah, I work for a public sector in Scotland, mostly user support, but mm-hmm. basically helping people along.
Great.
Bit of development as well. But yeah, this whole EU thing has really had me scratching my head quite a bit.
As so with
what
many of us.
Planning next.
Great. So, as I said, this week we're discussing the EU cookie directive. So, to start us off, I tried to find kind of a brief paragraph to explain a little bit about what the EU cookie directive is. So, I found this on the internet. So, hopefully, this will kind of get us a little bit of a starter for 10. So, on May the 26th, 2011, a new EU originated law came into effect that requires website owners to make significant changes to their sites that may fundamentally change the way the whole web browsing and shopping experience for everybody. The cookie law is amended privacy legislation that requires websites to obtain informed consent from visitors before they can store or retrieve any information on a computer or any other web-connected device. Now, is that clear enough? Does that really sum it up for everybody?
Sounds like what they were trying to do.
Yeah, the one thing I found, because I also work in the public sector, and I've had some involvement with the ICO on this, and just to clarify, it isn't just about cookies, it's about privacy generally. And I know the ICO chap who I met said, it's very easy to forget to think that this is all about cookies, but it isn't. The directive is very much specifically about privacy.
Right, okay, so with that in mind, then, what's the basics from if I own a website, what's the basics I need to be aware of?
You need to have things like, ideally, particularly if it's a public sector or a big organization, you need to make sure you've got things like a privacy policy, that where you're storing information, you make the user aware of it. And where at all possible, you actually ask their permission before you actually do that. Although there's obviously some debate about what you actually need when you need to ask permission based on what you intend to do with that information and also what information you're selecting.
I think the interesting thing about the law generally and how it's applied is, I mean, what problem, I suppose, is it trying to solve? I think it's the interesting question that seems to be at the heart of what why there's been such a problem with the EU cookie law. I mean, what is the problem they're trying to solve in enacting this piece of legislation? Has anybody got any ideas or thoughts around what it is?
I think originally the idea was protect privacy.
Okay.
There's been some concern over people not knowing what information is about out there about them. But just in terms of it trying to solve that, this is totally and utterly the wrong...
Completely. I agree. It is.
It's not the best way to start a show saying that it doesn't work. But
also, there's a lot of confusion about how it's being implemented and what you're supposed to do, what you can and can't do, because it's not very clear. And I know the ICO have actually said that a bit like the way things happen generally with the EU, each country is implementing it in a different way and taking different interpretation of it, which makes it very difficult to actually manage.
So that's an interesting point, actually. So if every country is implemented slightly differently, is there the chance that I am going, if I make my website all conform to British standards, so the UK standards, does that mean that I could actually be in breach of perhaps the German interpretation of it and therefore somehow be charged in Germany for breaching their interpretation of the law? Is that possible then in that scenario?
It is, actually. I've had to advise on this recently, and it is the case. Yeah, the interpretation is different from every single country. So the way, effectively what happens with the legislation comes in, and then the countries then interprets it and sets its own guidance out. So the ICO guidance that we've seen that's come out in the UK is different from, example, you can get the French guidance as well, and it's ever so slightly different from the UK guidance as well. Whereas, and I think it doesn't help that the ICO keeps changing their mind on the guidance, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute, but
yeah.
It is different in every single, it could potentially be different in every single EU country. So there's a project I'm working on at the moment, which is helping to go and look for, okay, number one, what is the interpretation of the law in each of the countries? And more importantly, number two, what's been the reaction by other companies in that country to what should be happening? So it really is a bit of a minefield, this one.
Is it not just so complicated to even attempt to impose that no one really needs to worry about that? It's kind of the feeling I was getting from a lot of places that, given that the ICO,
doesn't it? I mean, the fact that it was due and we had to comply by the 26th of, I think it was May 2011, was the original time that we had to comply.
And no other nation appears to be making any attempt to do this. So I think the feeling it was going to die a death by itself.
Well, I think
probably
that was
not the best advice to give.
Well, I think, you know, without starting to sound like a Tory politician, you know, it's quite hard to talk about interpretations of European law in different countries. You know, like you say, a lot of countries take a long time to implement this stuff. We just had to be pretty damn efficient at implementing European law in this country, and we tend to fit it, you know, we tend to go by the letter of the law as well, which means that, yeah, it ends up causing us more problems than it doesn't, than, say, compared to France and Germany.
Yeah, there's a couple of countries that have actually imposed it successfully, and maybe in inverted quotes, but Norway was one of them, certainly, and I can't remember, there was a second one, and we were kind of the third country to have an attempt at it. Is that not correct?
It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, the only countries I've been looking at have been the sort of the larger economic powers within Europe. So, because again, I work for the private sector, those tend to be the countries that they're most worried about. So, you know, France, Spain, Germany, and the UK mm-hmm. are the ones that I've looked at. So, no doubt, I'm sure that the Scandinavians are very much on this and very much, you know, working it out. But again, it'd be interesting to see what happened with the other, you know, with the sort of more with the larger economic countries in the EU as well.
Just going back to the original purpose of this law. My biggest worry is it gives the impression that something's being done, because I don't think the law as it is implemented, or could be implemented, does protect privacy. But it gives this idea that they're out there doing something.
Yeah, I think you're right. It kind of gives, all it's doing is pushing this idea that effectively what we're having to do with our websites is push the decision point of privacy back to the user again. So it's much more, okay, Mr. User, we've given you all the information about these cookies. You decide if you want to keep them, delete them, or whatever you want to do with these cookies that you've probably never heard of before, rather than perhaps... Go on.
Yeah, sorry, I don't think that will work, because
no,
users aren't... interested. I think all of the studies that I've looked at, that they come back quite clear that people...
I think there's an optimistic one. Yeah, e-consultancy said that. I think they did some research and they reckoned only 23% of people, if given the yes-no choice, would accept cookies. And I know, again, I don't know what that means for... Does that mean cookies per se are bad, or the education around cookies is bad? But it like you say, it's pushing the impetus to for the user to answer the question, which they necessarily haven't got the information or the knowledge to be able to answer.
Yeah, I know I don't accept the cookies thing when it pops up, but that's just out of pigheadedness.
Yeah, I think most people will actually say, oh, you know, whatever, I just want to read the content. They just say yes, 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 as it happens with a lot of things. And that's how, for instance, you know, people are able to install viruses, because people just don't pay attention to what they're actually reading. Mm-hmm. You know, how many times have we heard people say, you know, about when they install things, how many times do you read the T's and C's before you install software?
Yeah.
You know, okay, that's a bit of an excessive example, but even if it was a simple one-liner, a lot of people just don't bother to read it.
I think so. I've noticed a few examples, though, whereby the box with the ticket box and the little message is actually styled quite dramatically differently from the rest of the site, and in a lot of cases, worse. Mm-hmm. Now, my original interpretation of that was something's been chucked up quick and dirty, but is it possible that it's actually been styled in that way to try and draw your attention to it so it doesn't look like it's part of the site, so you can actually make that informed consent?
I think that's quite hopeful.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I think most of the patterns I've been seeing, and this is, again, much more in the e-commerce space, where effectively, you know, they don't want to give people that choice. They just don't want people to go there. So a lot of the implementations, like if you look, I think British Telecom have got one, BT.com's got an interesting one, where it's very, very, it's kind of very light grey and a very light grey box with a light grey thing in the bottom right-hand corner. So it's not a question that's forced upon you when you first go there. So there's the two kind of interpretations, which is number one, you know, we pop up and immediately you have to make that choice before you can even see the site. Or there's number two, where it's there at the bottom right. So if you do want to say, don't track me, you can do it, but it doesn't enforce that step before you go through the before you, you know, to be able to check out the content, really.
So you mentioned there, Joe, a little bit earlier about that the ISO actually changed a few things just before it went live. And I think one of the main things that jumped out for me about that change was the basically the whole premise of the cookie regulation has moved from requiring informed prior consent to now accepting implied consent. Now, that just kind of seems like a little bit of legalese there, trying to get some people out of jail free card.
It's ridiculous, really. Yeah, it feels like, I mean, you guys, do you remember the Disability Discrimination Act and the accessibility stuff that came in about 2002. It feels just like that all over again. There was a massive hoo-ha, you know, everybody's, oh no, we're going to get sued. You know, we've got to sort this out now. All of the, you know, the organizations that had the ability to move quickly to do it, like people like the BBC did it, fixed it. Again, the public sector moved slightly quicker often than a lot of private sector companies to fix it. But then, you know, then what happened? Nothing really effectively happened with that legislation other than, it's something you were supposed to have to do under legislation. In the end, it came back to that very similar thing, which is why I kind of talk about the implied consent, which effectively means you don't have to give consent. The same is true with the Disability Discrimination Act. Until somebody complained about a website, no action was taken, and it feels very much like that's going to happen this way around as well.
Yeah,
the ICO did actually say an event I was at that they weren't going to do anything until somebody actually made a complaint. They didn't feel that anything would really happen until there was a test case.
So is this likely to just go down the same road as accessibility? Until we get any you know, actual court rulings or case law around this, it's everybody's just going to be kind of poking around in the dark and doing the absolute bare minimum.
Yeah, I think so.
There's a big question about whether the ICO's interpretation of the legislation is legal, because we could get... the EU coming back to the ICO and saying, no, that implied consent is the opposite of what the legislation outlined, which I don't know if that will ever happen, but it could.
This is the problem with having multiple jurisdictions, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
ridiculous. It's like you say, so in fact, what could happen legally is that you could take a case through the UK courts under this law and all the way up to the EU courts as well, and there could be interpretations that differ all the way up. So... again, yeah, like you say, until somebody decides to take a legal stance against this, it'll be interesting to see what does happen. And it'll also be interesting to see, again, because certainly I think what happened much more with the Disability Discrimination Act is it was private it seemed if it was a lot more like private, I think, wasn't it? Private people that were suing organizations rather than it being the government taking them to court in the first place. Anyway, so be again interesting to see if the ICO shows their teeth, as it were, and does want to take people to court under this, or they rely on it happening if private individuals doing it under this legislation.
I think also you could also see that it happens a bit like the Freedom of Information Act, where you get corporations that actually use it to go after their competitors.
A little bit more hopefully. I'm hoping that if it is used, it'll be used as a way of getting people who do collect data in an incorrect manner, as it were. Use cookies to track people and other ways. I don't know, maybe I'm just being a bit too hopeful there.
But this is actually a perfectly valid point. I mean, I don't want to mention any names, but I won't mention any names because I don't want to get struck. But we all know that there are, shall we say, third-party cookies out there that are being used to track us across multiple sites without mentioning any names.
Yeah.
and, you know, you kind of wonder why on earth those are real. To me, those are the real troublesome ones. You know, those are the ones that are using information to in a way that I may not choose to or want to allow me to, and I certainly think more people are going to object to that than to an individual site holding information that may be relevant to, you know, my shopping basket or my, you know, whatever about me using that particular site.
Yeah. So in that scenario, then, is this EU cookie directive actually lulling users in a false sense of security? You know, I'm kind of thinking my dad goes on and he sees a box and goes, "Yeah, okay, I want to be secure," and then he thinks that's him secure. Forever, even though he just did it on the BBC website. Now, to be fair, my dad's a little bit more savvy than that, so I'm just using him as an example. But
yeah, but that's a perfectly valid point, Paul.
Mm. Mm. I think it is, and I think it's interesting because, again, I've seen both sides of this within user testing. So I do an awful lot of user testing as part of my job, and what's interesting is you see the kind of creepy adverts that do follow you around the internet, and it's interesting seeing people's reactions to that, you know, not understanding, you know, why on this website they're looking at. Is there an advert for the website they looked at a couple of clicks ago? And people don't understand why and how their privacy is being invaded in that way. They don't understand how people are tracking them across the internet. And like you say, it's like they see it happening to them, but again, don't know how to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And again, is this going to work? Is this law going to work? Because again, if I'm going to say, I don't know, and I've seen a number of companies that do this. I know a lot of insurance companies do this. At what point does the OCO regulations kick in? Is it at the point where I'm going on the insurance company's website, or does it kick in when I go to the party forum that's listing an advert for that insurance company as well? So it's a good point that you've made that it's not just one website that's got to comply. Yeah. It's a number of websites that have got to do it in the same manner for everybody to be clear on what's happening.
And also you've got, using the insurance company example, a lot of big banks and financial institutions use a number of third-party for the applications. So if they comply to it in their actual website, but when then you go into the application and it's storing your data for the application process, so it's actually, from the customer's point of view, they think they're in one website, they've accepted or declined it at the very front of the website, but really all that is your brochureware pages. Yeah, so you then have to rely on your third parties to actually implement exactly the same policy. And the chances of them implementing exactly the same technique as you have, because they have other holdings that are related to other financial institutions and banks and their own requirements, it's a can of worms.
Yes, it is. Well, I mean, you think about a classic, you know, user journey of somebody trying to apply for some car insurance. Mm-hmm. They start at Google, they type in car insurance, right? Google's dropped a cookie. Knowing they're looking for car insurance, they click on somebody like, I don't know, confused.com, compare the market, money supermarket. They go into that website, they get another cookie's dropped, another warning comes up that's different from the Google one. They go through that website, they go to a third party website, you know, like an insurance provider. Again, a cookie's dropped at that point, and another warning comes up at that point as well. Guaranteed, those three websites at each individual point will have a different UI interpretation of the cookie law, mm-hmm. and a different way of asking for that consent. So, you know, it may be yes, I accept cookies on one. It may be press OK to continue on another one. It may be a checkbox on a third one. There's no standard way of doing it, which it's just a mess for everybody.
I think this is another big problem with the law, is that it's a misinterpretation of how people use the internet. They think we go to one website and we approve it, and then that's our website. We're there for half an hour, and then we go to a new website. website. Instead, you hop around.
I think Absolutely. Also in that situation where you are just trying to do a single transaction, but you're moving between multiple sites maybe that you've never been to before, even more reason why people are just not going to read it. They're going to say, just stop it.
Whatever.
They really aren't going to care. And I think that's that. You know, I think that's just completely missing. So that's a really good illustration, I think.
Yeah, so in that scenario, do we need to rely on something like browser settings, you know, so you can actually put the switch it on or off in Internet Explorer or Chrome or something like that, or perhaps group policies from some kind of tagging container? So, for example, I know that Tagman, it has implemented its own thing whereby it just blocks if you've said that you don't want cookies on another site that has Tagman container tags, you are then blocked from every site that contains Tagman container tags, and due to the fact that a product like Tagman is quite wild out there. I mean, is one of them the either browser or group policies on? Is that something that really should be getting pushed forward?
I can answer. The browsers definitely should be doing this. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I've talked a lot about the browser and doing a lot more to make our internet experience a nicer one and being a bit more consistent. Browsers should be the place that this is happening. But I think the problem comes again with browsers doing it is if you're doing this on effectively a generic level. So probably what's going to happen if a browser company implements it, they're going to say to you, you know, do you want to have standard site-based cookies or are you happy for third-party tracking cookies to be applied? And what's going to happen is, you know, most people in their right mind are going to say, no, I don't want third parties tracking me. And what that's then going to mean is, you know, how does that work with people like analytics providers rather than advertisers as well? So I think it's up to the browser people. It should be done at the browser level. But at the same time, it's, you know, in meaning we don't have, hundreds of thousands of ways of approaching this interface way of doing it, we might actually just create one large problem where, you know, effectively web analytics isn't working for 30, 40% of the users on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Which means it's not working at all, effectively.
Well, completely. So it's back to this idea again. It's a very ill-conceived piece of legislation going after people who use what is, in essence, a great technology for nefarious purposes, rather than putting the impetus onto, you know, it's effectively like saying to people, well, you don't want to get murdered. What that means is then we're going to make it a legal thing that you have to wear a bulletproof vest all of the time. You know, it's putting the emphasis in the wrong place.
So,
has
there been much best practice shared? I mean, is there much out there that kind of says this is the correct way to do it, this is not the correct way to do it? Is there anything out there or any examples of good websites that are doing it well? I'll take that as a no. I mean, the BBC's interpretation again, was interesting. And BT as well, we mentioned that before. But my problem with the BT solution of it is it's all fair and well if you're going to BT, you understand that. But I clicked on a link in Twitter the other day to sponsor somebody using, and I forget what the name of it is, BT's kind of Just Giving type thing. I can't remember what it's called now. Anyway, when you click on that, you instantly get this cookie thing. Now, I don't know why, but even though I knew exactly what it was, it completely threw me off. I had no idea what was going on. And I'd ended up leaving it and not sponsoring until I got home that night, to be fair. But it's knocking people out the journey when they actually want to do something good.
Yeah, I agree. I've not seen anybody doing it. I mean, the only people I've seen doing it well are people who like putting a little link in their navigation, which is saying, oh, watch out, we use cookies. Mm-hmm. That's about the best way it's been done so far.
Little messages that pop up and then disappear after 20 seconds, and then that's implied consent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's getting away from that informed consent thing, and I know that the ICO changed it so it was no longer informed, but you know, it was a pain in the arse, but at least informed consent kind of meant that you were actually teaching the user a little bit about it, you know, explaining what cookies were and things like that, which was far better than just kind of going, here's a cookie, do you want it? And you know, people kind of going, well, I've got absolutely no idea what that is, so I'll say yes or I'll say no, but it's not actually helping them at all.
No, I think it isn't. There's a really good one on the Daily Mash, actually. They've got a really nice one as well. And it's basically at the top, it says, we've updated our privacy policy. Not that you care. You can read it or click to get rid of this annoying box and carry on as before. And the button says, whatever. And I think that's a really interesting interpretation of it. You know, it's a big button that says, whatever. Yeah, just let me get to it. And I think it's all it's going to become, if it ever happens, is just going to be another yes box that everybody clicks to get in.
Yeah.
Because nobody in their right mind is gonna offer people a no option, which means that they can't track them anymore. They're gonna do their bestest, the damnedest, to say, make sure people click yes, so you know they can track what's going on their website.
I've got one other problem with how it's been implemented, and I don't know if Sarah's had the same problem. Is people trying to sell solutions to you?
Yes.
We had a hoster that used to work with us, and they expected us to pay £1,000 to do a cookie audit and implement something. And all we wanted them to do was go in and delete the analytics code, which we did ourselves in the end. But and I think there are quite a lot of people in the public sector who don't particularly know much, who rely on their hosting companies and CMS people, will get stuck in that trap and spend a lot of money for not very much.
Yeah, definitely. There's a whole industry that's grown out of this, of companies who seem to just be here to give you audits for your to check your cookies or to give you solutions that are going to fix it. You know, I kind of touched on before Tagman, who are now offering that as part of their service, which I kind of think is okay in my opinion, because they're already doing it, so they're just kind of trying to help. I know they're obviously going to make money out of it. That's why they're a company. But it's these other companies that have just kind of sprung up to kind of go, we'll save the day. We really don't understand it much either, but we'll try.
So the one company that wanted to charge us £1,000 for no work, I've seen their implementation on quite a lot of public sector sites.
One of the things I've come across is another public sector organisation who told me about a company that have actually approached them with an analytics solution that doesn't use cookies.
So is that something like Web Trends
come out of this,
or something that uses kind of server logs or something like that? Because I can't see.
I didn't know what it was, and I was quite surprised that there was actually something already out there that actually managed to find a way of doing analytics, good analytics, without using cookies.
They're going to be so disappointed when nobody bothers to worry about this. You know, all that extra R&D to put into this.
That's why I think they kind of jumped the gun a bit.
So maybe not using one of those tools, but and it kind of goes on to the next point I was going to make was who's responsible for this? So we've kind of touched on big organizations there, but thinking about the kind of the small agency, 4 or 5 people, and they have a book of, you know, 100, 150 clients. They host them, they build their sites, and every one of these clients is maybe 1 or 2 man bands. Where does it rely? Who's at fault there if there's a problem? Who needs to implement the cookie directive there?
I think that's a good question. And I think it's one that remains to be answered, I guess. What's interesting, I think, is that the ICO would just... They said that they'd sent a letter to the 150 big, or the 50 biggest websites to see how they were interpreting this law. I don't really know what this means from a small business point of view, really, other than, you know, if your client asks you about this, the very least you should have a line on what they think they should be doing, which is, I think, because the ICO talk about this concept of being, I think, is it on the road to compliance they talk about?
Yeah.
Which is this idea where, you know, you're taking steps to do it, which is number one is doing a cookie audit, and number two is, you know, just at the very least telling people what cookies are there. So I think if you were going to give advice, it probably would be around, you know, make sure you're on the road to compliance, which is understanding what cookies you're placing and, you know, at the very least have some words around how you use cookies on your site. So it doesn't have to be £1,000 piece of consultancy. It needs to be, you know, a little piece of work, which is here's a quick, and a couple of paragraphs for your cookie directive. You know, I'm sure you could go and borrow that from somebody else up there who's got some very expensive lawyers to advise them on what cookies should be there and what to do. So maybe just, again, taking a step on that road might be enough.
I think the best advice I heard about this is you just need to be less worse than everyone else.
So. I think also, and hope that nobody comes after you.
Yeah.
It was mentioned there that the ICO went to kind of the top 50. Now, being that, I don't know who's all in the top 50, but the top 10 certainly feature your Googles, your Facebooks, that kind of thing. As far as I remember, the only... based on Hitwise top 10s, the only British based one in the top 10 is BBC from memory. So do organizations out with the EU, such as Facebook and Google and things like that, do they have to comply to this as well? Is that part of it if they want to trade in the EU?
Only within EU jurisdiction. Because this was a question I know I asked, is what, you know, what happens if a company says, okay, fine, we're going to go offshore? And their view was, well, it's where they operate, not necessarily where their website's hosted.
Right, okay, so people, if you want Facebook in the UK, or rather if Facebook want Facebook in the UK, then they have to conform to this as well.
Yeah, if they have a presence in the EU, then they have to conform to the directive.
Although I think there's a strong chance they'll just ignore it. Certainly Google, looking at Google Analytics, there's almost not a single mention of it. They just don't care. Okay. And I think they'll be probably happy to just ignore and take the fines.
I would imagine that they're working on a solution that means that they don't have to use cookies just in case, so they could swap it out. Because otherwise people will drop analytics.
I've been wondering, because we've dropped analytics. I don't know about if you have as well.
I dropped analytics altogether.
Wow.
Well, we've changed away from Google Analytics.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
We still use them for some sites. We're a lot more wary about them, obviously, and analytics in general in terms of the providers.
No, we had a panic and it had to go.
So just out of curiosity, not meaning to spend too much time talking about your organisation, but so you don't have any analytics, you don't have any idea how many people are coming to your site and what they're doing around your site?
We replaced it with Pywik, have you heard of that?
Pywik? No, I haven't, no.
I think that's it's a non-cookie-based one.
Okay.
But I've not looked under the hood at all at it, so I'm not sure. We'll probably be going back to Google Analytics soon anyway.
When it all
soon
comes
as you've got
down,
the all clear.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, okay. So, again, on the that was just another thought that I just had there. Is this the first of this type of legislation? Has any other countries around the world ever done anything like this before? Or are we blazing a trail here with this new type of privacy legislation?
I think blazing a trail is the right word. Being held back is maybe a better way of thinking about it.
I think so. Yeah, I suppose it depends on which side of the fence you look at it, doesn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I wonder about that, because I don't think it's going to be the last of this type of legislation. I don't just mean on privacy. I mean on EU, British government coming up with solutions to problems about the web that they don't know anything about.
Yeah.
And I fear it's going to increase because, well, they need to look busy.
So, I mean, to summary, Ken, what we're saying there is what you should be doing as an organisation is you should be at least looking to take the first step on the road if you're not already halfway down that road already, looking to put some kind of message up at the very least, perhaps even a box to suggest that customers can switch off cookies. Is that probably in summary?
Well, I wouldn't want to say which way, what you should do, what you shouldn't do anyway. I think one of the part of the problems, us advising our clients on what to do is, again, I don't want to kind of put myself legally responsible if I give the wrong advice. So it's so up in the air at the moment to know exactly what to do, other than being on this road to compliance, whatever that might be.
There are two things you need to do, though. If you have a cookie audit and then a clear and visible privacy and cookie policy. That's the bare minimum. But you're right, that's on the road.
Yeah, it's just watching, just keeping abreast of what's going on, I think, really. Just understanding, you know, what's changing. And hoping, and you know, the chance are the people that are going to get sued first for all this is going to be a big company. It's not going to be the ICO taking a little company to court about this sort of stuff.
I think it either that or it'd be a public sector organisation.
Do you think? I mean, it sounds like you guys, at the very least, are getting there with it. I can't imagine that every public... I'm sure that every public sector organisation out there is doing something about it commercially. I know a lot of huge companies I work for are just like, yeah, well, if when they come and knock in, we'll start sorting it out.
I think a bank will be the first one to go, because, I mean, in all seriousness, there's that much going on just now around privacy, around security and things like that around the banks. It just is going to take one bank to make a screw up. It's going to be all over the papers because everybody loves trash in the banks just now, and that'll be the first opportunity for that to jump in. I
like that.
That's a good point. I think you could be right.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
But again, if we look back to the kind of the Disability Discrimination Act stuff, who was it who got done first of all back then? It was people like the Olympics. It was Sydney Olympics. That was Australia. It'd be interesting to know who, looking back again, who it is that's going to get done for this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you're right. I wonder if it's going to be either that or it's going to be an ad network. So they're going to take a look at an ad network who's doing
stuff. I'd love
stuff
to see it be some of the the companies I'm not going to name that do that take advantage of third-party cookies. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I bet it's going to be those guys.
So, if I wanted to know more about this area, where would be the best place for me to go?
So I think a good place to start would be the ICO blog, actually. There's a good blog post they published on the 25th of May, which contains a video, which is basically a cookies frequently asked question. So I think, again, that would be a good place to go and have a look yourself if you're worried, but also if you need to send it to any clients that are worried about it as well, it's a good place for them to start too.
Yeah, there's a website called nocookielaw.com, which I have also had some good videos on it. I quite like that one, quite informative, despite their stance.
This podcast and all others wouldn't be possible without UK2.net. They kept the British Tech Network afloat for over 3 years now. They're brilliant and you should use them. We have a whole pile of voucher codes here for various discounts on UK2. But the first thing you need to do is if you head over to britishtechnetwork.com and down the left hand side you will see a link to go through to UK2. If you could click on that link, not just when you're purchasing but also when you're logging into your account, primarily just so that we can they can track you with cookies and we can they can see that we sent you. Yeah, just good for them to see the amount of traffic coming through from British Tech Network. I'm sure they don't track you for cookies. I've got no idea. I've maybe got myself in a bit of a hole now, so I'm going to leave that whole section alone. But if you go over to the UK2 and you can buy all sorts of services from them, once you get to the checkout, if you type in some of these voucher codes and you can get some money off some things. So if you pop in British Tech DNS, free DNS for 2 years, British Tech Domains, it gives you 20% off domain name registration. British Tech VPN gives you 50% off the first month VPN charges. British Tech Server gives you £50 off any gigabit server that's on any contract length, but that's an online-only deal. You can't phone up for that one. And finally, British Tech VPS gives you your first month free on a VPS server. That's UK2. They support British Tech, and you should support them.
If any of you didn't get that, if you go to the British Tech homepage and click on the sponsors link at the top, all the offer codes are on that page.
Oh, I didn't realise they were up there already. That's superb. Yes, go there. They're all there if you couldn't catch what I was saying there. So now we're going to listen to questions. So we've just got a couple of questions this week from our happy listeners. So if you have any questions relating to any kind of web development, anything around cookies or HTML5 or anything that you want, just fire them in to britishtechnews@gmail.com, or you can tweet me direct. I'll give you my Twitter handle at the end of the show, or British Tech News on Twitter. So the first one comes from DRG1243. I want to add a background gradient. Should I do this with an image or a CSS gradient? I'm assuming that that's around is browser support at a stage where we shouldn't be using images for this anymore. The fact that maybe should we or shouldn't we be using images as background gradients aside.
Can I pitch in with this one? Mm-hmm. I've actually done this on the British Tech Network site, and I found that we should definitely be using gradients and not images. However, the problem you get is that each browser still implements it in a slightly different way. So I found the only reliable way to do it is still, unfortunately, with images.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Right, okay.
I spent ages trying to get that to work without using an image.
All right, okay. So the second one comes from a chap named Chris Edwards. Thanks for emailing in. Should I be developing with TVs and consoles in mind?
I got asked this question a few weeks ago in a meeting, actually. So it's really hard to do it, to be honest. I think the answer is yes, smart TVs are growing really, really quickly. I think you need to think about the user base of what you're producing or your application that you're working on, and really decide if your user base is going to be looking at it through connected TVs or consoles. I mean, I work with Love Film, for example, and again, they are very much in that space, and it makes a lot of sense for them to work to produce apps on these areas. But again, if you're a kind of standard website these days, I don't think it's something you need to really look at unless you expect a lot of your user base to come from there, really.
I guess it's look at your analytics and see if those kind of things are actually growing in your in the device market, and then maybe start to think about it once it kind of breaches maybe the 3 or 4% or something like that, and it's looking like
something
it's going
like
up
that.
How good are consoles and TVs with a browsing experience these days? I'm to design for
I certainly, PlayStation 3's browser is pretty horrendous. It doesn't matter how well you try. Yeah. Unless it's a white background with Times New Roman on it, you're going to be having a bit of a trouble.
Yeah, I suppose there is, legacy. That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
It's really hard. I think there's a lot of it. I mean, again, apps seems to be a good way forward for some of these as well. But it depends on the provider. So the TVs have all got slightly different interpretations of HTML. So they're not using, for example, not all of them are using WebKit or a standard web platform to do this stuff on. So it's kind
it's
of
all
like
happening again.
Yeah, it's like it was 15 years ago.
It's just an extension of the same problem we've got at the moment across all the different browsers in terms of interpreting CSS in different ways, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's the same. I remember getting this question, I'm showing my age again, 10 years ago when everybody was like, oh, you know, we've got to do something for interactive TV on the red button. It was the same problem 10 years ago then. So these things just seem to be lit cyclical.
I suppose at the end of the day, as long as you make your website in a responsive fashion, then you should kind of be okay, because it should kind of expand up to, you know, the size. I mean, there's a lot of people sitting, okay, maybe not the general public, but there's a lot of people sitting there with kind of 27 plus monitors on the desk, and I appreciate that's possibly people in the industry anyway. You know, you've got to kind of expect that, you know, on an iMac, for example, that's in at 27 inches. And with Lion, you've got full screen Chrome and full screen Safari. So you kind of have to make a nice experience for that. And so it kind of goes hand in hand, I think. So
I think it's a show in itself, this.
Mm. Yeah, indeed it is. Yes. Yeah, we'll move on. So the next one I think we've actually already covered, but we'll just kind of cover it off again. WP Star. Asked us this one. As the EU cookie directive is only in the EU, could I check the user's location and just put the message to those within the EU? So I'm assuming in that scenario they're just kind of sniffing the location of the IP address. To be honest, that's a little out with my comfort zone in being able to talk about that, because I'm not even sure if that's technically possible. I think it might be, but
it is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can do it. I know a big US company we're working with is doing exactly this, because they don't want to put it anywhere near the US market. So they're doing exactly this. So yes, you can do it. The thing is, you've got to have good data. So you've got to have good geolocation, GIP location data. So,
right, okay.
You know, if you've got it.
The only question I would say about that is that if you've got to write it so that the site works, whatever the user decides, why does it matter?
Yeah, very
yes.
true.
Yes. So the answer to that one, I suppose, is if you feel it's absolutely necessary, then yes, technically it's possible, but you possibly should be questioning why you're doing it.
Yeah, because I think the thing is there's going to be people across the world that would probably not, you know, there's going to be a few people who may not want to allow cookies on the site for whatever their reasons are anyway. So given that you've got to write the code to work, the site to work with or without, why not just allow it to be there anyway?
Mm-hmm. And
it's an interesting question.
Yes. Finally, this one's from Mark. I think we're going to have some opinions on this one. I know I certainly do. I want to get into web development. Should I learn Dreamweaver or something else?
When I first read this question, I thought, absolutely not.
Yes.
Because, but then I didn't read the question properly, and it said, I want to get into web development, so he's therefore learning. And I think in that situation, probably something like Dreamweaver is a good tool to use. Although I don't like the idea of actually saying, should I learn Dreamweaver? You've got to learn to use it to learn HTML. And then once you know HTML, then move on to just using a text editor, which is what I do.
Yeah, as long as you don't get trapped using their libraries and all that kind of features.
Oh, that's horrific.
I was going to say, this is another reason for not using something like this or FrontPage, because they put an awful lot of junk in there that you don't actually need.
And to be honest, if you want to get a job somewhere else, not every company uses Dreamweaver. Yeah. So if you're looking to get a job in the industry, you're relying on the company you're working for using Dreamweaver as a tool. So it's good if it's a hobbyist.
Yes.
It's a good place to start. But my advice is go and buy Jeffrey Zelber's book. Much better investment.
Hey, what was the name of that?
Designing with Web Standards. I think it's on its third edition now.
Okay, and finally, have we got any cool things? We'll just start. Sarah, do you have anything for us tonight?
I try to make my cool thing is related to the subject we're talking about, which is why this one might seem a bit strange. But I was thinking about cookie management generally, and the browser I've always found the best for that is Firefox. I don't generally use Firefox anymore because of the fact that I prefer Chrome. However, Firefox cookie management I think is superb. And this is through the options or preferences menu. And then you go, I can't remember exactly. Did you get into it exactly? It's one of the options in there on the privacy tab. I know that. So you go into that and you need to show cookies. And the management in there allows you to look at for each, it groups them by site and allows you to look at each individual cookie and the value and then decide whether you want what you want to do with it. So you can actually see exactly what each site is actually storing. And many times I've actually used this for testing when I'm developing with cookies. Probably shouldn't say that given that we're talking about the EU cookie directive, but it's actually proved very, very useful, which is why I picked that for this particular cool thingy.
Great. Superb.
I've got another one as well, which is also cookie related too, quickly.
Right.
Which is, now I've gone and lost it on my browser. Where's it gone? It's a website from the, it's called youronlinechoices.com. And it was set up by the Internet Advertising Authority, and it allows you to turn off third-party tracking cookies for all of the ad networks that are out there in one handy little place. So that's youronlinechoices.com if you're a little bit paranoid.
Okay, and is that a completely free service? You just go
up free service,
up and
yeah. Off? You go up and on your machine, it'll turn off cookies for a lot of the major big advertising networks that are out there right now.
Superb. So that's youronlinechoices.com. Mm-hmm. And Lenny, what do you have for us?
Oh, sticking with the cookies, I've got a website called silktide.com, and they've got a cookie audit tool. So you don't need to pay people to go and audit your site. You can, and if you're not sure and you're not sure what's on your site, you can check yourself. Uh-huh. They've also got a cookie consent plugin, which I've not used, so I can't vouch for it, but it's free. So again, you don't need to wait. If you're not sure, you can use a free thing instead of paying someone a grand or so.
Superb. And finally, mine is Ghostery, which is a little plugin for Firefox. And basically, what it is it sits in the top right-hand corner of your browser. And whenever you land on a site, it actually lists all the different cookies that are being set on your machine as you arrive there. Some websites are scarier than others. But in the main, it basically just lists all the cookies that are basically active. And you can use it in two ways. One, you can use it just to see what cookies have been fired when you land on other people's sites, but you can also use it as a little bit of an audit. So I actually think that's a full house of free cool things tonight. I think
yeah, just so people know, Ghostery is also available on Chrome as well.
That's very true. Sorry, yes, you're quite right. Yes. So all free tonight. So we'll pop the cool things and links to them in the show notes. So that's grand. So finally, all I've got to say here is if you want to contact us and send us in any questions or anything like that, as I mentioned before, you can send them to britishtechnews@gmail.com. You can follow the network at British Tech News on Twitter. You can get a hold of me. I'm Paul Wheatley on Twitter. And Sarah, where can I get hold of you?
You can get hold of me on the Twitters at Sarah Jane UK, or I'm also on The Big Show and The F1 Show on the British Tech Network.
And Joe, where can they get hold of you?
Best place is probably Twitter. I'm Mr. Joe, so MRJOE on Twitter.
Grand. And finally, Lenny, where can we get a hold of you?
Twitter as well, just DRGS100.
Grand. So all that is left for me to do is say, if you've liked this show, please head over to iTunes, give it a review, give it a rating. Really appreciate that. That really helps us get up the charts. And thank you very much for listening. Good night.